Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 6, Text 9. Tam tikshna chitam ativam chestitam. Tam tikshna chitam ativam chestitam. Vikshyantara kosha parichandi savat. Vikshyantara kosha parichada sivat. Varastriyam tat prahaya chadarshite. Varastriyam tat prabhaya cha darshite. Nirikshyamane janani yatishtatam. Tam tikshna chitam ativam chestitam. Vikshyantara kosha parichada shivat. Varastriyam tat prabhaya cha darshite. Nirikshyamane janani yatishtatam. Others? Vaishnavis.
Thank you.
Tam, that, Putana Rakshasi. Tikshna Chitam, having a very fierce heart for killing the child. Ativam Chestitam, although she was trying to treat the child better than a mother. Diksha Antara, seeing her within the room. Kosha Parichada Asivat, like a sharp sword within a soft sheath. Barastriyam, the very beautiful woman. Tat Prabhaya, by her influence. Cha, also. Darshate, being overwhelmed. Nirikshamane, we're seeing. Janani, the two mothers. He, indeed. Ashtitam, they remain silent without prohibiting. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Putana Rakshasi's heart was fierce and cruel, but she looked like a very affectionate mother. Thus, she resembled a sharp sword in a soft sheath. Although seeing her within the room, Yasoda and Rohini, overwhelmed by her beauty, did not stop her, but remained silent because she treated the child like a mother. Purport. Although Putana was an outsider, and although she was personified fierce death, because the determination within her heart was to kill the child, when she directly came and placed the child on her lap to offer the child her breast to suck, the mothers were so captivated by her beauty that they did not prohibit her. Sometimes a beautiful woman is dangerous because everyone, being captivated by external energy, Maya Mohita, is unable to understand what is in her mind. Those who are captivated by the beauty of the external energy are called Maya Mohita. Mohitam Nabijanati Mamebya Param Avyam, Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Text 13. Natevidu Swakakatim Hivishnum Dirasaya Ye Bhadhir Attamanina, Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text 31. Here, of course, the two mothers, Rohini and Yasoda, were not Maya Mohita, deluded by the external energy, but to develop the pastimes of the Lord, they were captivated by Yoga Maya. Such Maya Moha is the action of Yoga Maya. Omaginata Maranda Shyajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gudavena Maha Sri Chaitanamanobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupagaramayam Dadati Swapadati Kam. So Srila Prabhupada here in his purport does something interesting. He presents two possible explanations for what's going on here, and then basically tells us which one is the one, the correct one to accept. He's explaining how Putana, because she looked very beautiful, she was allowed entrance into, you know, the room where Krishna was, and nobody tried to prohibit her. And Prabhupada explains here, he says in the purport, but he makes the statement, the mothers were so captivated by her beauty that they did not prohibit her. Okay, so that much we know, that they were captivated by her beauty and they did not prohibit her. And Prabhupada now is going to offer two explanations how that could possibly be so, why that might be so. He says, sometimes a beautiful woman is dangerous because everyone, being captivated by external beauty, is unable to understand what was in her mind. So how many think that's the reason why the mothers didn't prohibit Putana from entering into the room, because she was very beautiful, and they're being captivated by the external beauty, they were unable to understand what was in her mind. How many, raise your hand if you think that's the reason why Yasoda and Rohini allowed Putana to enter into the room. Okay, one hand up. Any other hands up? You see who's listening. What to speak of thinking, who's listening to the purport. Okay, we'll go on here. It says, that's not the answer. By the way, I'll just let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. But Prabhupada does elaborate upon it a little bit. He, you know, quotes, refers to a verse from the Bhagavad Gita and a verse from the Bhagavatam. But then he goes on to say, clearly, he goes on to say, here, of course, the two mothers, Rohini and Yasoda, were not Maya Mohita, deluded by the external energy. No, that wasn't the reason why they let Putana in, because they were captivated by her beauty and etc. No, it says, but they weren't deluded by the external energy. But here's the reason. To develop the pastimes of the Lord, they were captivated by Yogamaya. Such Mahamaya is the action of Yogamaya. So in other words, it appeared as if they were just bewildered by the beauty. Superficially, somebody might think, well, look, they're just getting bewildered by her beauty. But that was, Prabhupada's clearly explaining here, that that was an exhibition of Yogamaya and not Mahamaya. Ordinarily, it's Mahamaya when that happens. It's just like Prabhupada says here, sometimes a beautiful woman is dangerous because everyone, being captivated by the external beauty, is unable to understand what is in her mind. And as Prabhupada would say sometimes, why sometimes? That's really the case practically. Now, I won't say all the time, but most of the time. Certainly here in the material world, that's the case most of the time. And it works both ways. It's not just sometimes a beautiful. It's not just the men that are captivated by the beautiful woman. The women are captivated by the handsome men. That's, you know, that's the nature of the material world. And sometimes a beautiful man or woman is dangerous because everyone is captivated by external beauty and is unable to understand what is in the other person's mind. So that's what's going on here in the material world. Everybody's captivated by this external beauty and becomes victimized by that. That's generally what's going on. What's supposed to, and that's further nicely explained here in a paragraph from the purport in the fourth canto, where Prabhupada explains how that states that actually that is the case, that is the position, but what our response to that as devotees should be. This is chapter 25, I believe. I can't remember. Canto 4, chapter 25. Maybe it's verse 25. Anyway, in the purport, Prabhupada says, Krishna bahir mukhana boga vanchakade nikatashta maya tare japati adare. It is said in the Prema Vibharta that when a living entity wants to enjoy material nature, he is immediately victimized by the material energy. A living entity is not forced to come into the material world. He makes his own choice, being attracted by beautiful women. Every living entity has the freedom to be attracted by material nature or stand as a hero and resist that attraction. Okay, so if you're here in the material world, you're certainly in the category of being attracted. You know, every living entity has the freedom to be attracted by material nature. If you're here in the material world, you're in that category. You're attracted by material nature. That's what happens when you're here. Why? Because we made the choice of wanting to enjoy, and we become victimized and we're attracted by material nature. Now, in the human form of life, you get the opportunity to do the second thing, stand as a hero and resist that attraction. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, as I said. The men are attracted by the women are attracted by the men, and that's what being in the material world is all about. You're attracted, you know, by the material nature. But the human form of life, as I said, is that opportunity to stand as a hero and resist that attraction. That's what being a devotee, one of the most important things about being a devotee is, you know, well, that's one of the most important aspects of a life of a devotee. Prabhupada goes on to say, it is simply a question of the living entities being attracted or not being attracted. It doesn't make a big deal out of it. Here, as Prabhupada's explaining, it's not like it's some big complicated thing. It's a decision. It's a decision. Every soul, you know, in the material world, particularly in the human form of life, is confronted. You have a decision. It's right in front of you. It's right in front of your face, and you got to decide. What do I want to do? Do I want to allow myself to just be attracted or not? Because Prabhupada says it clearly. It's simply a question of the living entities being attracted or not being attracted. That's just another way of saying what I just said. It's up to us. It goes on to say, there's no question of being forced to come in contact with material energy. And then he goes on to say, one who can keep himself steady and resist that attraction of material nature is certainly a hero and deserves to be called the Goswami. So that's kind of the goal, you know, or one of the goals. Actually, yeah, it's the goal, because obviously the ultimate goal is Prema Pumarta Mahan, to reawaken your dormant love for Krishna. But you ain't going to get that. You're not going to be able to do that unless you do this first. You're not going to be able to become a lover of Krishna unless you first do this. So Sahajas kind of are the opposite end of the spectrum as far as this understanding goes. They think you can, love Krishna, but while being a godas. No. It's a total misunderstanding. See, Prabhupada goes on to say, unless one is master of the senses, he cannot be called the Goswami. Okay. The living entity can take, and now he reiterates, the living entity can take one or two positions in this world. He may become a servant of his senses, or he may become a master of them. By becoming a servant of the senses, one becomes a great material hero. And by becoming master of the senses, he becomes a Goswami or spiritual hero. So obviously the latter is what we're interested in. We're interested in becoming master of the senses and becoming Goswamis or Goswaminis, if that's the correct conjugation of the word, or spiritual heroes. And that's done by just, it's when you hear master of the senses, it's not like it's some, you have to become a powerful yogi. It's just Rishikena, Rishikesha Sevana, Bhaktucha, engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses. Just like exactly what we're doing here, engaging the senses in devotional service is how we become master of the senses and become Goswamis or spiritual heroes. Prabhupada, in that phrase before, says one may become a great hero by becoming a servant of the senses, one becomes a great material hero. If you're lucky. If you're lucky. Not everybody, being a servant of their senses, becomes a great material hero. It depends on your karma. You know, if you don't have the karma, you're not going to become a great material hero. You become a great material flop. You know. But, so this is something that, this is dealing with that aspect, this part of the purport where Prabhupada says people become captivated. A beautiful man or woman is dangerous because everyone is captivated by the external beauty. Everybody's a victim. So here it's talking about the beautiful woman is dangerous, but the beautiful woman is a victim too. The beautiful man is a victim. The beautiful woman is a victim. Everybody, all conditioned souls are victims. Basically, the understanding is, and Prabhupada touched upon this even in this purport and this paragraph I read, that when you make that decision that you want to enjoy the material nature, immediately you're introduced to Maya, and Maya goes, oh, so you want to enjoy the material nature? Oh, wonderful. Right this way, please. Right this way. Slap! Actually, she's much more subtle than that. She's much more subtle than that because if it was that dramatic and that, like, people would immediately come to their senses and go, no, I don't want to enjoy this material nature. I'll serve Krishna. But it's much more subtle than that because the conditioned souls get fooled again and again and again. See? So, But that's Maya's job. She has that thankless task. As I think I maybe gave this analogy in some class I gave a while ago. When I lived in Australia, at one point they actually stopped book distribution because we were doing it in a way that was creating bad PR. And we had to sell paraphernalia for a few years. We sold candles for 1 year and paintings for 2 years, going door to door, shop to shop, business to business. So getting to the point, I was selling paintings. I used to walk around with this big roll of paintings, that were made in Hong Kong and cost us like nothing, practically. But so at one point we were doing, offices and corporations. I used to go into I'm telling this story to make this point, that I used to go into a corporate office. If you could get into a corporate office, it was kind of like, you hit the jackpot, because once you got past if you could get in there, you had all these office workers, and they were just dying for an excuse to stop doing what they were doing. And if you could penetrate far enough, you could even get into the manager. And a lot of times they were really nice guys, you know, your manager. They had good karma. They, you know, you got that far. They just relax and talk with you. But the thing is, you had to get past the receptionist. You had to get past it. There was always a receptionist, you know, there was always that, like, front reception area. And there's usually it was a lady sitting there. And, you know, it was not easy to get past them. Why? Because their job was to make sure that only people with really legitimate business get in there. You know, get beyond her. Nobody who didn't have totally legitimate business could get beyond her. And very hard to get beyond them. Because, you know, if once you did, they knew that you just get in there and waste everybody's time and take everybody's money. And which happened on some fortunate occasions. But generally speaking, you couldn't get beyond them. They were they're vigilant. They knew, you know, they knew their job and they knew how to keep people out of there who weren't supposed to be there. So that's Maya. She's just like that. Maya's job is to make sure that only people who have, only living entities, only souls that have really legitimate business, those that really want to serve Krishna, not just, you know, try to exploit Krishna or whatever. Any other motive, no, doesn't work. You got to really want to serve Krishna, and then Maya, then you can get past Maya. Just like in that example, you got to really have legitimate, you have an appointment or some really legitimate business, and then you can get beyond that, you know, receptionist or secretary. Same thing. So that's why it works like that. So it's Maya is, she's got the thankless task, as Prabhupada would say. She has to educate the living entities, and part of that educational process is dishing out some tough love. We experience as punishment, or you could refer to it as it's love, because it's for the purpose of rehabilitating us, bringing us back to the point of where we can be re-admitted into, you know, serving Krishna, as mentioned here, this expression, to develop the pastimes of the Lord. Every living entity is meant for that purpose. Every living entity is meant to be instrumental in developing the pastimes of the Lord. That's our constitutional position. You see? We've deviated from that. We've given that up, you know. And as mentioned here in this in that paragraph I read, you know, living entity is not forced to come into the material world. He makes his own choice. We made that choice, you know, to give up being instrumental in developing the pastimes of the Lord. Big mistake. Big mistake. So now we have to correct that mistake. This is the opportunity. Human form of life, and beyond that, coming in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement is the opportunity to correct that mistake of having given up, our position as being instrumental in developing the pastimes of the Lord and wanting to, you know, enjoy the material nature. So this is the big chance. Now, I'll go on to another part of this property. So Prabhupada's, as I said, he made it clear that Rohini and Yasoda, they were not deluded by the external energy. They were, you know, behaving like that to develop the pastimes of the Lord. And that's not, you know, very hard to understand, and it's not very hard to believe. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, sure, I can easily, at least when I hear that, I go, yeah, no problem. I could easily relate to that. I can believe that, you know. But if you just keep reading another few pages, what you'll read is you'll read about how when Putana, she gets the opportunity to try to nurse Krishna, and then Krishna, sucks her nipple and he sucks out not just the poison but her life air and et cetera. And then she expands to a form of 12 miles. Now, there's an interesting picture in the Krishna book of that, you know, this big Rakshasi spanned the 12 miles. Now that is, for me anyway, is harder to believe. I mean, I believe it, but it's harder. In other words, it's inconceivable. It's inconceivable because, see, I don't know about anybody else, but I mean, I hike a lot, I walk around a lot, and I'm kind of aware of distances. So whenever I'm up on a hill, I know, like, how far it is from here to the beach. I know how far it is, 7-8 miles. You know, it's from here to the airport, 8 miles. From here to downtown, 10 miles, like that. So when I go up on top of a hill and I look, and I'm like, for instance, I'm on Kenneth Hahn Park, and I'm on top of that hill, and I can see the Los Angeles skyline, I know, okay, that's about 10 miles away. And then I visualize, okay, well, whoa, wait a second. I mean, Putana went from my size to covering that entire distance between here and all those buildings. Oh, my God, how's that possible? You know, I mean, did she expand like a string bean, or was it in proportion? Or, you know, what are we talking about here? It's something pretty inconceivable, no matter how you slice it, you know, whether it's a string bean or just, you know, a big, gigantic monster sort of a person. But so that is harder. You know, that's harder. And Archie did a fantastic job on Saturday. I thought it was one of the best classes I've heard, of explaining how, you know, this is not mythology. It's not mythology. It's never meant to be taken like that. So I just wanted to read a few things, which I don't generally like to read to everybody because it's hard. People are focused and stay awake. But I found some, I did some research, and I thought, you know, this is a really important point. So I wanted to read, and Prabhupada himself dealt with this. He was aware of this, you know, objection that people might have, this, thinking that this is mythology, and he made certain comments about it. So I wanted to share with the devotees what Prabhupada had to say on this point, because I thought it was very significant. So this is some excerpts from lectures Prabhupada gave on this particular point, how devotees should understand these pastimes, not just this pastimes, but, you know, all of the pastimes. So Prabhupada goes, mythology. As if Vyasadeva wrote this Srimad Bhagavatam to put before these rascals some mythology, some imaginary things. Just see how they want to be cheated. Such an exalted personality like Vyasadeva, who has given us the Vedic literature, he presented something which is imaginary? What business he has got? Therefore, sometimes these cheated people, they deny to accept that Bhagavad is written by Sri Vyasadeva. But those who are actually acharyas, those who can guide us, like Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they do not say like this, that it is mythology, it is imaginary. They accept it as it is. So we have to follow these Mahajans. Mahajana yena gatasa panta, dharmasya tattvam nihito guhayam. We have to follow great personalities, acharyas, acharyavan pudusho veda. One who has taken shelter of acharya, bona fide spiritual master, he knows. Acharyavan pudusho veda, because he is receiving the right knowledge from the right source. Acharya means by the disciplic succession. And then it goes on. Here's another response Prabhupada gave. He says, those who are not devotees, they cannot understand how it is possible. They say that it is what is called mythology. Probably just say mythology. It is mythology. It is not mythology. It is a fact. Vyasadeva, such a learned person, and he quotes from the Bhagavatam, Lokasya Janato Vidvams Chakra Satvita Samhita. He is Vidvan. He has written this Satvita Samhita, which is a spotless Purana. Satvita means totally motor goodness, Purana, with some mythology, some fiction, some imagination. It is rascaldom to consider it like that. It is not mythology. It is a fact. He has wasted his time to describe some mythology, but they have no common sense. And not only that, Vyasadeva has written later on all big commentators like Sridhar Swami, Vijayadwaj, Viraraghavacharya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sanat Goswami, many. They have never said that this is mythology. Never said. You'll not find any of the comments of these big stalwart acharyas. Viraraghava Acharya, he is a very learned scholar belonging to the Ramanuja Sampradaya. They have never said it is mythology. Where do you get this idea of mythology? He refers to some particular, to parts of this business. That is possible. God is all powerful. He can do anything. He can appear. Why should you restrict him not to become the son of Devaki? So obviously he's giving a class about the birth of Krishna. Why should you restrict It is, I underline this sentence because I thought it was good. Is he under your control or are you under his control? See, that's an interesting. Is he under your control? Is God under our control or are we under his control? Obviously, it's the latter. He can become Devaki Sutta. He can become a small child to be chastised by Mother Yasoda. He likes it. Everyone will, and goes on to say. But, so Prabhupada responded to this, objection. Actually, here's a really, I'll read you this one more, actually. This is a very common sense objection he responded to. He had a friend. Prabhupada says here, long ago, I was talking with one Arya Samaj friend. So he did not believe that a lotus stem can grow on the navel of Vishnu, and there Brahma is born. He says, everyone says like that, mythology. It is not mythology, it is a fact. So I asked him, so this is Prabhupada in a very, down-to-earth, common-sense way, really dealt with it. So I asked him that, here we see one coconut tree, and about 60 feet above, there is coconut, and there is water, there is pulp, and it is being carried from the ground. So Prabhupada goes, where is the pipe? Where is the pump? You know, visualize it. You got a coconut tree, 60 feet, that's quite high. Did he say 60 feet, or did I just make that up? Yeah, 60 feet. That's high. Okay, it's like a five-story building, or six-story building. And the water's getting up there, the pulp's getting up there. So Prabhupada goes, where's the water? Where's the pipe? How the water is there within the coconut? Can you explain? He challenged that person. So he could not explain. And then Prabhupada goes, then I said that even in material things, which is in front of you, you cannot explain. How you will explain the spiritual position? I say, we can't even understand these material things, so how are we going to explain the spiritual position? And let me just be a little bit more here. So Prabhupada's saying here about, he's talking about how Krishna's body is not material. And he says, otherwise, how Krishna can lift a seven-year-old boy Govardhan Hill? Is it possible by this material body? No, that is not possible. This is common sense. But they cannot understand Krishna. Avajananti Mamura. They call it is mythology. Mythology. Everything mythology. First of all, they cannot find out what is God. And when God comes, shows his opulence, these rascals say it is mythology. Prabhupada goes, what God will do? He comes before you. He displays his mighty opulences. He expanded himself into 16,000 forms. Mythology. Prabhupada goes, so what can I do? What Krishna can do. So in other words, we have to, have to try to have some faith. It's because it's a decision. It's a choice. We have to try to stick some faith in this, in these statements, in this philosophy. That's what, that's how I take the Prabhupada saying, what can I do? What Krishna can do? In other words, it's being explained. It's being described with, supported by like a lot of logic and argument and et cetera, but we have to give it the benefit of the doubt. Actually, that's the bare minimum requirement for being a devotee. Archer made the point that, in his class, that if we don't accept this, the statements of Vyasadeva, well, how are we, Prabhupada Nugas, how are we, Rupanu, how are we even Vaishnavas, right? Okay, that's fact. That's a fact. But initially, we don't start off from the realized position. It's not like when you, as a neophyte devotee, you're going to have some sort of a vision or an experience of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill or expanding into 16,000 forms. No. Initially, we just have to accept it. You just have to go, okay, look, based upon everything I've heard and all the, of this philosophy and the character of the people who are presenting the philosophy, I don't know. I have no experience, but let me accept it. I have to give it the benefit of the doubt. That's that. Prabhupada says that's like the first and the second stages of joining the Krishna consciousness movement. Shraddha, you give it the benefit of the doubt. This is something good. It makes sense. It could be true. And then you associate with people who are, spiritually elevated, and then you become you take shelter from a bona fide spiritual master, and then when you engage in the process of devotional service, means following the regulative principles, chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in other services, then you start getting some realization of these things. You know, anartha nivritti, nishta, you become steady in devotional service, ruchi, you get a taste, ashakti, you become attached, bhava and prema. See, so it's a gradual progression. You can't expect right away that you're going to have the experience, but at least, as I said initially, that Papa, we have to have that, make that decision that, yeah, I'm going to make the decision to place my faith in these statements, in this knowledge. That's what, you know, Papa means, what can I do? He can't do anything. It takes two to tango. If the person makes a choice, well, I'm not going to believe this stuff. That's it. What Prabhupada can do? What Krishna can do? Nothing. And then one last objection Prabhupada dealt with here is that I'll read one last reference here. It says, there are different planets where Yamaraj is there. How a dead man or a soul is taken there, everything is there in detail, referring to the Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada says, if you say it is mythology, why you should say mythology? You have not seen the whole universe, how it is situated. You are simply imagining from this place. So your imagination, imaginology. We have our mythology, but Prabhupada, see, we have got some evidence. You know, we have at least the support of some books. Prabhupada referred to their positions, imaginology. You say we're believing in mythology, we say you're believing in imaginology. You know, Prabhupada said, at least we have support of some books like that. So, okay. And just to wrap it up, I wanted to read one more, a purport from the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is really powerful. And sometimes you can read things or hear things and it just kind of goes right past you. You don't really think about it very much. But I thought this was very significant and very powerful, and I'll end the class with this. So this is first canto, fifth chapter, and I've neglected to write down the text number, but I think it's 20 or 21 or something. I'm not sure. But this is Narada Muni speaking to Srila Vyasadeva. And this is after he instructed him to meditate on the pastimes of the Lord in trance and describe them. You know, everybody knows the story. Vyasadeva compiled the Vedic literatures, the Vedas and everything, and he was feeling dissatisfied, and he was kind of, you know, there he was one morning, it's described, and he was kind of thinking, wow, man, I'm really kind of not feeling it. As they say these days, I'm not feeling it. What's wrong? You know, I did all this great work and everything, and I'm feeling kind of depressed. And then Narada Muni came, and Vyasadeva figured it out himself, and then Narada Muni came and confirmed that, well, you know, you put out all this good information, but you encourage people in such a way that they're going to, you know, they're not going to make progress in devotional service. They're going to think that sense gratification is okay. And anyway, so now after giving him the instruction that he should describe the pastimes of the Lord, he said this. He said, your goodness, this is Narada Muni speaking to Vyasadeva, your goodness has perfect vision. You yourself can know the supersoul personality of Godhead because you are present as the plenary portion. Plenary, as I was learned from Archita about a year or two ago, means complete. I thought it meant partial, but I looked it up in the dictionary. He told me, and I looked it up in the dictionary. Plenary means complete in every respect, full. So he's being referred to as a plenary portion of the Lord, Vyasadeva. Although you are birthless, you have appeared on this earth for the well-being of all people. Please, therefore, describe the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, more vividly. And this is Prabhupada's purport, and let's be it. Srila Vyasadeva is the empowered plenary portion incarnation of the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And once again, plenary portion means complete. Nothing missing, nothing absent. Okay, the full quid, everything. He descended by his causeless mercy to deliver the fallen souls in the material world. The fallen and forgotten souls are detached from the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The living entities are parts and parcels of the Lord, and they are eternally servitors of the Lord. All the Vedic literatures, therefore, are put into systematic order for the benefit of the fallen souls. And it is the duty of the fallen souls to take advantage of such literatures and be freed from the bondage of material existence. Although formerly Srila Narada Rishi is his spiritual master, here it comes. This is about to help us understand the position of Vyasadeva. Okay, so Narada Rishi is formally his spiritual master, but says Srila Vyasadeva is not at all dependent on his spiritual master because, in essence, he is the spiritual master of everyone else. But because he is doing the work of an acharya, he has taught us by his own conduct that one must have a spiritual master, even though he be God himself. God himself. But it's, and he gives the examples, just like Lord Sri Krishna, Lord Sri Ram, and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all incarnations of Godhead accepted formal spiritual masters, although by their transcendental nature they were cognizant of all knowledge. So he's putting him in the same category, Prabhupada's putting him in the same category as Krishna, as Ram, as Lord Chaitanya. Now it goes on to say, last sentence. In order to direct people in general to the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, he himself, and he is capital, okay? In order to direct people to the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, he, meaning capital, means referring to Lord Sri Krishna, he himself, in the incarnation of Vyasadeva, is delineating the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. So it was like Lord Krishna is incarnated as Vyasadeva to give us... So basically these books are written by God. You know, Vyasadeva is not just some great sage or something like that. When we hear literary incarnation, sometimes you think of some empowered jiva, something like that, but that's not what it sounds like here to me. It sounds like Vyasadeva is more than just an empowered jiva. It could, you know, Prabhupada's directly saying here, Lord Sri Krishna, in order to direct people in general to the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, he, capital H, himself, in the incarnation of Vyasadeva, Krishna as Vyasadeva, is delineating the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. And if I did a little bit of further research on that back about, I don't know, a year ago, say, and we found that, at least in this Kali Yuga, the Vyasadeva is an incarnation of is Vishnu Tattva. It's possible that in other Kali Yugas he is, you know, a Shakyavesha avatar, but this Vyasadeva, who's the author of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Vedic literatures, is a plenary portion of Krishna. It means he's a fully empowered incarnation. Okay, so I'll stop there. I don't really think we'll take any questions because it's kind of late. Thank you very much. Gunther Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.